Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
You know, one of the things we love to do on this show is take a closer look at the things that really impact our lives, especially right here in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
Absolutely. That's what Think and Act Locally is all about, right?
Exactly. And today, we're diving deep into something that's near and dear to all of our hearts, our kids' education.
It's so important.
Yeah, we're taking a look at an article from the Mises Institute called Indoctrination. 35 years of the U.S. Department of Education.
Okay.
And it really got us thinking, you know, about the role of government in education, especially at the federal level.
Right.
One of the things that really jumped out at us was this idea that the U.S. spends a ton of money on education per student, way more than a lot of other countries, but our students aren't necessarily performing any better.
Yeah, it's kind of a head-scratcher when you think about it.
So we're going to try to unpack some of the arguments in this article, look at some of the data, and see if we can, you know, figure out what it all means, especially for us here in our local communities.
Sounds good.
So let's jump right in. The article starts off by talking about the Department of Education's budget and how it's just exploded since the department was created back in 1980. Mm. And it's pretty staggering when you look at the numbers.
Yeah.
In 2016, the department had a budget of like $70.7 billion.
Wow.
And on top of that, they were asking for another $75 billion to fund pre-K.
So we're talking serious money here.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder, you know, are we getting our money's worth? Are we seeing that kind of return on investment in terms of the quality of education our kids are getting?
It's a good question.
The article goes on to compare the U.S. to other countries in terms of how much we spend per student as a percentage of our per capita income.
Okay.
And the U.S. spends a whopping 23.2%, which is a full 9% more than Singapore.
And Singapore is known for having a really strong education system.
Exactly. And yet when you look at the results, over 26 other countries that actually spend less per student than the U.S. are getting better outcomes. Like the U.S. ranks 35th in math internationally and 27th in science. Mm. Meanwhile, Singapore, which, remember, spends less than us, ranks first in math and second in science. So something's not adding up here, right?
It seems like there's more to the story than just how much money we're spending.
That's what I'm thinking. And the article points to a few areas where they think the U.S. system might be going wrong. One of the big ones is standardized testing.
Oh, yeah. That's a hot topic.
Yeah, you know, American students take something like 112 standardized tests between pre-K and 12th grade. You hear that? 112 tests.
That's a lot of testing.
It is. And when you compare that to a lot of these top performing countries, they're only testing their students like 3 times throughout their whole school career.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
And it makes you wonder if all this testing is actually helping our kids learn, or if it's just creating a ton of pressure and taking away valuable time from actual learning.
It could be doing more harm than good.
Right. Like, are we so focused on measuring everything that we're missing the bigger picture?
It's something to think about.
And this whole focus on measurement kind of ties into another issue the article brings up, which is grade inflation and lowered standards.
Yeah.
There's this idea that everyone needs to be a winner, but that might not be setting kids up for success in the real world. You know, they give this example of a school district in California where they actually changed their grading scale. Mm-hmm. So now if a student gets above an 80%, it's automatically an A.
Seriously?
Yeah. And anything below a 20% is an F. So you could literally have a student getting like a 50% on their work and they'd end up with a C.
That doesn't seem very accurate or helpful.
Right. Like, are we really doing kids any favors by not being honest about where they stand academically?
I don't think so.
Okay, so now the article moves into some pretty sensitive territory.
Yeah.
They start talking about the potential for bias in the curriculum, particularly in subjects like history and social studies.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be concerned about a perceived left-leaning bias in the way these subjects are being taught. And they point to a few examples, like they talk about revisionist history textbooks that might downplay certain historical events or figures. And they even bring up the omission of the Constitution from national standards.
Wow.
Yeah. And they also mention the banning of certain classic works of literature from school curricula. They raise the question of whether schools should be striving for absolute neutrality or if it's inevitable that certain values are going to be emphasized.
It's a tricky issue. It really is.
So I guess the question is, how do we ensure that kids are getting a well-rounded education where they're exposed to different viewpoints and taught how to think critically and form their own opinions?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It really is. But, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. The article does highlight some alternative approaches to education that are actually seeing a lot of success. And that's what we're going to explore next.
That sounds interesting. So, one of the things I appreciate about this article is that it's not just all doom and gloom.
Right.
They do point out some bright spots. They talk about organizations like Excellent Educational Solutions and the Harlem Success Academy as examples of programs that are, kind of breaking the mold and getting some pretty impressive results.
And what's so interesting about them?
Well, one thing that stands out is that a lot of these programs are operating outside of the traditional public school system.
Oh, okay. So they have more freedom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They have more flexibility when it comes to curriculum, teaching methods, even how they measure student success. And another key element they highlight is parental involvement.
Mm-hmm.
These programs really emphasize the importance of parents being actively engaged in the learning process. It's not just about dropping your kids off at school and hoping for the best. Parents are really involved.
And, that just makes sense, right?
Honestly. Right.
When parents are invested, kids are more likely to thrive. But I'm wondering, is it all just about parental involvement? Or are there other factors at play here?
Oh, for sure. There are other factors. One thing that these programs seem to have in common is a real commitment to high standards and a culture of achievement.
Okay, so they're not shying away from pushing kids to excel.
No, they're not. They believe that all children are capable of learning and excelling,
right,
given the right support and environment. And I think that's something we talk about a lot on this show, that whole idea of think and act locally.
Absolutely.
We can have these big national conversations about education, but ultimately, the impact is felt right here in our communities, in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena, our schools.
Right. It's about what's happening in our own backyard.
Yeah.
So, this article also touches on the issue of government-funded pre-K, which has been, a pretty hot button topic for years.
Yeah, it has. And the article raises some concerns about government-funded pre-K potentially becoming a tool for, indoctrination.
Okay. Indoctrination. Hmm.
They use the example of the UK, where they adopted universal pre-K back in 2007. And while it did provide free childcare, which was helpful for a lot of families.
Sure.
The actual educational gains for the kids seem to be pretty limited.
Oh, interesting.
So it's not this clear-cut solution. There are valid points on both sides of this debate, What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's complicated, right?
It is.
On the one hand, early childhood education is incredibly important. But then there's also that concern about, government overreach.
Right. And I think it's really a question for each community to grapple with.
Yeah.
What works in one place might not work in another. We need to have those conversations locally, considering the specific needs of our families and our children.
Exactly. Thinking and acting locally.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the big question is, what can we do? What can we do right here, right now to make a difference in our schools?
Well, the article really emphasizes a few key things. Parental involvement.
Right.
Seeking out alternative educational models, if those are available, and pushing for more local control over the curriculum and the teaching methods in our schools. It's about empowering parents and communities to really take ownership of their children's education.
So it's about being informed, being engaged, and being proactive.
Exactly.
It's about asking those tough questions, advocating for our kids, and supporting initiatives that align with our values.
Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, education is about so much more than just test scores and, funding formulas.
Right, right.
It's about preparing our kids to be successful, well-rounded individuals who can contribute to their communities and make a positive impact on the world.
That's such a great point. We all want what's best for our kids.
Of course.
And that starts with ensuring that they're getting a quality education that equips them with the knowledge, the skills, and the values they need to thrive.
Absolutely. And if this conversation has resonated with you, I encourage you to check out the full article. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. It's a really thought-provoking piece, and it'll give you a lot to think about.
As we were talking about these alternative programs like Excellent Educational Solutions and the Harlem Success Academy, it made me think.
Yeah.
What makes them so successful? Is it something that we could, replicate here?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, one thing that really stands out to me about these programs is this idea of building a culture of high expectations. They don't just, set the bar high.
Mm.
They really provide the support and the resources to help those students reach it. It's about, believing in every child's potential and then creating that environment where that potential can flourish.
Right. And it makes you wonder if maybe sometimes traditional public schools get a little, bogged down in the bureaucracy and yeah. that one-size-fits-all mentality. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's just not enough room for that kind of individualized approach. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's a really valid point. You know, these alternative programs often have more autonomy. They can kind of tailor their curriculum and their teaching methods to the specific needs of their students, be a little more nimble and responsive to, you know, what's working and what's not.
So what can we learn from that? Even if, you know, our kids aren't in these specific programs, is there something that we can kind of glean from their success and apply to our own local schools?
Absolutely. I think, you know, it starts with us parents and community members
right.
being informed, being engaged,
right.
you know, really knowing what's happening in our schools, asking those questions and advocating for the changes that we want to see. It's about, you know, pushing for more flexibility, more innovation, more personalized learning experiences for our kids.
And maybe even shifting our mindset a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, instead of just kind of accepting the status quo,
mm-hmm.
we need to really believe that our kids are capable of achieving great things.
Yes.
And then, you know, work to create those conditions that allow them to thrive.
Couldn't agree more. It's about fostering that culture of high expectations, not just in our schools, but in our homes, in our communities as well.
Wow, this whole deep dive has been really eye-opening for me. I mean, it's really made me think about education in a completely different way.
Yeah.
And it's definitely given me some things to think about as, you know, we consider our own schools here in Deer Park, La Porte, Pasadena.
Well, I think that's the power of these conversations, right?
Mm.
We're not just passively absorbing information. We're actively engaging with these ideas
right.
and figuring out how they apply to our lives, to our communities. You know, that's what Think and Act Locally is all about.
Exactly. And if you're looking for a way to, you know, act locally and make a difference right here in our community, one way to do that is to support our show. Your donations help us keep these conversations going and empower residents of Deer Park, La Porte, and Pasadena to, you know, really improve their lives. You can find a link to donate in the show notes. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive. Until next time, keep thinking, keep acting, and keep making our community a better place for all.